Thanks to HelloFresh.com for supporting Jim Harold's Campfire. Receive $35 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code JIM09. That's JIM09, J-I-M-09. Thanks, HelloFresh.com.
Welcome to our gathering tonight. Here we share stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things. Sit back, relax, and warm yourself by Jim Harold's Campfire.
Welcome to the Campfire. I am Jim Harold. So glad to be with you once again. And I want to dedicate this episode to the memory of a friend of mine. Unfortunately, today I attended his funeral. His name is Michael. And despite the health challenges and obstacles he had to face, he always smiled, he always had a joke, and he never complained. And really, when I think of Michael, I think of the word courage. And we wish his family the best, and we believe in another side. And Michael loved saltwater aquariums and his yard. So wherever he is now, I hope he's got a hell of a big yard and a great big aquarium. Michael, this one's for you. And now on to the campfire. Next up on the campfire, a brand new listener. I think she's been listening a week and a half, and heard our recent episode, The Zozo Phenomenon. I almost am afraid to say that, on the Paranormal Podcast, where we talked about this weird entity that comes across on a Ouija board. If you have not heard it, check out the Paranormal Podcast and check out that episode. It's an excellent one. But I guess Catherine was inspired to call in because she has her own strange Ouija board story. Catherine, welcome as a listener and as a caller. Thank you. And please tell us what happened.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. It happened when I was in sixth grade. I was about 12 years old, and one of my classmates, she had a slumber party for her last year with us at our school. So we went out to her aunt's house, who owned a rather large home, and it gave us plenty of room for about 20, 25 girls running around, being, you know, as young teenage girls, scared of everything and watching scary movies. And there was a swimming pool, and there's just lots of things to do. But my attention was drawn towards a Ouija board that the host had brought out for some of the girls to play. And we were playing about four people or so. And one of the people that were playing with me was one of my good friends who I knew what the Ouija board was. And this was my first experience ever seeing one. I've never heard of one before or seen one or played one. So I wasn't really understanding that it was the dead talking to us. I just thought it was some sort of quirky game. And when we started playing, it became pretty active. But we all blamed my friend because we thought, okay, well, this is how she is. She's trying to scare us all. And it just went on to be kind of strange because none of our fingers were actually touching the planchette. And it just kept moving all around and yes, no, and answering questions. And some of the girls kept provoking it. And there was a situation where we were in a walk-in closet,
right,
and a shoebox that I know being 12 years old, there's a lot going on in your head, but I know the shoebox wasn't hanging off the edge, and it just crept out and it just slammed down right next to us. And it was a large walk-in closet. None of us were near the walls to hit it or, you know, be any sort of vibration like that. And when it fell down, that was the end of the session for me. I ran out of there faster than I could count. Then for the rest of the evening, I just stayed away from the board. Then in the morning, I was the last one to leave. So I was with my friend, the girl who was moving, and she convinced me to sit down on the board again. And so we played, and it became really active. And I can't remember all the questions, but it was really fun. It was active. It was answering. And I just couldn't understand it. And then we moved to her mom's house later in the afternoon. And when we got on the board once more, nothing happened. So we kept asking questions, mm-hmm. nothing happened. So finally, we're trying to impress each other. We're like, well, we're not scared of you. Like, you were active before and taunting it and just getting ourselves in trouble. And all of a sudden, let me kind of go back a little bit. We were in her mother's room, and we're kind of towards the back of the bedroom. And again, we were by the wall, but I don't recall being so close to it. I felt like we were about a foot from it.
Right.
And there was a large round clock on the wall. And so we kept poking and poking and poking. And then finally the bear woke up, I guess. And it felt like, at least to my, how I saw it, it felt like the clock came off the wall and it just slammed down right in front of us on the board. And again, I just bolted out of there. I didn't even look at my friend. I remember just running. And I thought it was over. I thought, well, okay, I'm never going to deal with that again. And so I went home that day. And in the evening when I went up to bed around 8:30, 9 o'clock, I felt weird. And I can probably relate it to paranoia at the time. That's what it felt like. It just felt like something was in the room with me. And I live in an old farmhouse at that time. I'm actually mm-hmm. originally from Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
So at the time, I was just thinking, well, maybe, I don't know, I've watched scary movies before and felt that feeling. So I just thought, okay, stop being a scary cat. And I went to bed, but I just couldn't. I kept tossing and turning. In the corner of the room, I swear something was standing there. So about 3 days of this, it just felt like something was standing in the room with me. And I'm sorry if my voice quivering, it's still kind of creepy to me.
That's okay.
And it actually would, I'd feel it outside still. It wouldn't just be in my room. I would go out to our machine shed where we had farm cats. And I had chores to do, being on a farm, things like that. And I just felt like when I walked into the shed, I swear someone was standing behind me. And I thought it was maybe my older brother. He likes to scare me. So I turned around and I told him to cut it out. No one was there. I went around the whole area. And then I remembered my brother was off at my aunt's house. And so I thought that was really weird. So I got out of there. And then that night, or maybe the night after, I was in the restroom just brushing my teeth. And I felt like all of a sudden that presence was in the bathroom again.
Oh my.
And my hair is standing up right now. It just really frightened me. And this time it was like a heavy feeling. It felt darker.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it was dark or if it was just, I had enough of it. And so being a 12-year-old, I was like, Mom! And I went downstairs and I said, hey, do you want to stay in my room tonight? Trying to make it sound like, yeah, I just want good old, time right. with Mom. Because if I told her, I know she'd be very upset. And she's very religious, not in the sense of like overburden or anything. She believes in evil and she believes in good. And to her, the board definitely would have been evil. So she spent the night with me and then I never felt that again, ever. And I told myself, I'm never going to touch the board. I'm never going to conjure anything. Till this day, I love ghosts. I love going on ghost tours. I look up the paranormal, but I will never conjure anything ever again. I couldn't handle it.
You know, it may surprise you because if you've only been listening for a short time, you wouldn't necessarily know this. But even though I do shows and so forth on all of this, Ouija board is something that does scare me to some extent. And even though we do have one in the house, because my wife had one from when she was a kid years ago and we never threw it out. And I do remember playing with it maybe one time 12, 13 years ago before I ever started in paranormal podcasting way back in 2005. But at this point, as much as I've heard, it's fine down in the basement in a cabinet. That's okay. I don't feel any oppression from that, but I don't think I'd take it out and start asking it stuff.
That's a wise decision, Jim. I listened to one of your previous guests who was a historian on the Ouija board.
Yes, said, Merch.
Murch, yes, Mr. Murch. And he said he found it rather like a neutral tool, but I agree with the fact that if you use it to try to conjure something, you can get bad results. And if you're not prepared for it, especially me being 12, I didn't know anything about it.
Right.
I'm very glad that my mom, I don't know, she has a very compassionate soul, so I don't know if her energy neutralized it or what. But
well, my feeling is kind of like a chainsaw. You know, there are people out there, and we've had one person, Karen Dahlman, as a guest, who says, hey, you know, the Ouija board is neutral, but you can get good things out of it. And she says she can get good things out of it. And she seems like a very genuine and sincere person, and I don't doubt what she says. But I think, to me, the Ouija board is like a spiritual chainsaw. And if have you ever seen those guys that can take like a tree stump and they can like carve it or ice and carve it with a chainsaw into mm-hmm. something, a beautiful work of art. But if you put it in the average hands of a 12-year-old or even somebody my age, my advancing age, who doesn't know what they're doing, I think you could create a lot of havoc. So to me, I think that's a pretty good parallel just to my way of thinking. So I don't blame you at all for staying away from the Ouija board after that experience, but I am glad that you are not staying away from the campfire and that you found us and called in tonight. I certainly appreciate it, and welcome aboard.
Great. Thanks, Jim. I appreciate it.
Thanks to HelloFresh.com for supporting Jim Harold's Campfire. HelloFresh is the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking fun, easy, and convenient. Each week, HelloFresh creates new delicious recipes with step-by-step instructions. And each recipe, well, it's designed to take around 30 minutes to make in your kitchen. And they're set up in such a way that anyone, including me, can make a delicious, and believe me, that's a feat, can make a delicious and nutritious home-cooked meal in 30 minutes. Whether you usually cook for yourself or you're not as comfortable in the kitchen like me. Now, I got to tell you, it is so cool. I love what they do because they take the freshest ingredients, they measure them to the exact quantities needed, so there's no waste, and everything's delivered to your doorstep in a special insulated box. You know, it's funny because I've been telling my neighbor about HelloFresh and saying how they should try it. And my wife also has been trying to convert her over. And she said, you know, I was just reading something about them, and she brought out her Consumer Reports magazine. This is absolutely true. This has nothing to do with HelloFresh talking points or anything like this. This is totally separate. And it's the October 2016 edition of Consumer Reports. And I open it up here, and HelloFresh has earned an excellent rating from Consumer Reports. Can you believe that? But I got to tell you, I really, really like HelloFresh, and I think you will too. So much so that I have teamed up with HelloFresh, and they have a great discount. And I'm going to tell you about that in a minute. But first, I'm going to tell you about one of my favorite meals I've had with them. It's the steak fajitas with kiwi salsa and crispy beans. It's kind of hard to get through this spot because my mouth is watering so much from thinking about these fajitas. HelloFresh. I got to tell you, you are going to love it. So back to that great discount. Okay. I've teamed up with HelloFresh, and they're offering everyone in our audience $35 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code JIM09. That's J-I-M, the number zero, and the number nine. That's JIM09. One word, no spaces. JIM09. I've really enjoyed HelloFresh. I think that you will too. Give them a try. Go to HelloFresh.com and use that code JIM09 to get $35 off when you subscribe. You are going to love it. Thanks, HelloFresh. Next up on the campfire is Chris from London. We love to hear from our international callers. And if you are international, not U.S. based, don't let that stop you. Go over to jimherold.com/campfire and sign up via our portal there, and you'll actually have an international option so we can arrange a time, because we know there are time differences that make it a little challenging. So if that be the case, we can certainly work with you to make it happen, because we love to hear from people from all over the world with their campfire stories. And Chris, who's been a listener for several years, has one now, and it's about an intense psychic experience. And I can't wait to hear about this, because these kinds of stories fascinate me. Chris, welcome to the program. Thank you for listening for all these years. And tell us what happened.
Thanks, Jim. It's a pleasure to be on the campfire. it sounds like it's going to be a sort of harrowing story, but it doesn't end badly. So just so
that, that's good.
Expecting that. It's not a happy story, but it doesn't end badly. So I was 16 years old, and I had walked with a friend to sit by the river, which is the River Colne near Wivenhoe in Essex, where I'm from. In the afternoon, it was a perfect summer's day, and I wasn't stressed in any way, and had in fact just been reflecting that I'd really not got a thing to worry about. And then suddenly I was hit, and it was really, you know, instantaneously, with the realization that my father was attempting to commit suicide. And I was absolutely certain of it, and it was happening right then. And I immediately started replaying in my mind him saying that morning that he was going for a walk as he left the house, and he never kind of went out for a walk, and how he'd looked sad as he said so. And he was being treated for depression, which I knew about, but I didn't have any reason to suspect he might attempt to commit suicide. Anyway, I was thinking that somehow I should have realized that this is what he was planning, and that my conclusion and panic was somehow logical deduction, when really I couldn't have known that. Anyway, I was still holding it together at this point, and I told the friend that I was sitting with that I had to go, and I started walking the 20 or so minutes through woods back towards the house. And over the course of the walk, the feeling intensified. And by the time I neared the house, I was almost running and was in tears. And I passed some friends who were playing football in the park by the house, and they saw that I was upset. And I sort of muttered something to them about my dad and rushed past them. And when I got in, I just was pacing around the telephone, which was on the wall, nonstop, knowing, just waiting and dreading, waiting for the ring, which came within 5 or so, 10 minutes maybe.
Oh my.
And it was the police phoning to tell me they'd just picked up my father, who'd looked as if he was about to jump from a bridge over the A12, which is sort of a major road, as they were driving underneath it. And he'd slashed his wrist. So, I mean, that's quite something, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And, It actually turned out that the wound was superficial, although it did leave a nasty scar. And he was sectioned for a time at a mental hospital, but went on to recover fully and return to work in a few months. And he was a professor of literature at the Essex University here. And he never had any more significant problems along those lines. But we never talked about it much, but I got as clear a description of the time frame from him and from the police as possible, which was pretty much to the minute. And I'm absolutely certain it hit me the moment he cut his wrist, which was in a copse just near the motorway there, after which he approached and stood on the bridge, and he'd been intending to jump off. And that must have been as I was really starting to panic over the course of my journey home. I'm just absolutely, you know, certain of it. And this occurred in, so it was 1991 or 1992, and there were no mobile phones, of course.
Now, what do you attribute this to? Did you have, obviously he's your dad. Do you think that it was a special connection you had with him, or do you feel in general that you have maybe some psychic gifts?
Oh, I don't think I have any sort of psychic gifts, really, any more than anyone else, I suppose. I've had, you know, lots of little things here and there, like I suppose just about everyone has, where there have been a few other little things that weren't anywhere that don't sound as impressive as an account as that have happened to me in the past. I'm sort of, in fact, it was you on your show that introduced me to Rupert Sheldrake's work.
Oh yes. The sense of being stared at.
Exactly. That's right. And in fact, that was entirely thanks to you that I've ended up reading his whole back catalog and even going to a workshop he did at his house in London, which was absolutely fantastic.
That would have to be great.
It was fantastic all day in the summer of 2014, and it was really inspirational. He was fantastic. And I first heard of him on your show, so thank you. I'm kind of with him on that. Some sort of conscious field that most people ignore or have been sort of conditioned to ignore. And I'd previously, as a child, I was interested in paranormal things, having come across books in the library and that kind of thing on the paranormal and on UFOs. I was fascinated, but never had experienced anything personally. But I've met so many people that I trust and believe who have had experiences of all sorts of different paranormal things that, and I've always been open-minded to it personally, but this one experience, it's one of those things where, you know, you can't prove it to anyone else on the basis of that experience, but it's proved it to me.
Now, what was your father's reaction to this? I'm assuming you shared this with him.
I did share it with him, yes, and he was remarkably, you know, he actually was, I think, conditioned to the point of wanting to ignore these things even when I explained that situation, explained that occurrence to him. He didn't deny that it could have happened, but he just sort of, you know, didn't want to particularly want to hear about it. Although he did confirm the time frame to me exactly. So I was able to confirm to myself that it was, that it was absolutely to the moment, basically.
Well, Chris, that's fantastic. I appreciate it. Thank you for listening all the way from London, England, and also for sharing your story today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Jim. Thank you. I'll keep listening.
I love this next story. I was telling David, who's on the line from Chicago and has been a longtime listener since 2009 or so, that I always think that I've heard it all on these shows, and then somebody will come up with a story and share something that's happened to them that I've never heard of before. And I absolutely love this story. David, welcome to the program, and thank you for your support all these years. Tell us what happened.
I appreciate it, Jim. Thank you very much. So the story with this is that, what's it called? Back in 2009, I was going to be getting married in November. And about a week or so before the wedding, my brother passed away. He passed away in a car accident. You know, he was the he was my oldest brother, and he was the family member that kept everybody together. You know,
right.
He was always able to, you know, to rally everybody and get them together. He was like the glue for the entire extended family and everything. So he was the genuinely good guy, and so. Like I said, he passed away in a car accident, you know, circumstances, and we ended up having to bury him actually the day after we were supposed to be going to get married. So,
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Thank you. It's okay. We had to postpone the wedding, we ended up having just a small wedding, 3 months later. And, me and my wife got together, we were happy, you know? And finally, let's see. So my wife got pregnant about a month later after we got married. And so we were living in this small little apartment by ourselves, you know, just living the honeymoon life, you know. And about about 3 months after we were married, one night I remember I was asleep and I woke up and I noticed that I was on the wrong side of the bed. It was pretty funny. I thought it was a little odd that I woke up on the wrong side of the bed, because it was my first time waking up on the wrong side of the bed. You know, usually, you know, my wife likes to sleep on the side of the bed away from the door because, you know, she's afraid of the door because somebody could come inside, whatever. But, instead I was on the other side. So the next morning, you know, I woke up before she woke up. I went to work. When I came home from work, we were driving to my parents' house, and, I asked her, hey, I have a question. Like, why did I wake up on the other side of the bed in the middle of the night? And then she just, like, she was pregnant, hormonal. She started crying. And she's like, oh, my God, David, I saw your brother. And I was like, what? Huh. And she said, it really intrigued me because I know my wife is a sensitive. But, you know, she's sensitive to those kinds of things.
Sure.
She told me she was asleep, you know, on her side of the bed. And she woke up. And she felt this blackness, this thing that was black that made her feel just wrong. This made her feel bad. You know, she was really afraid, you know. She woke up just afraid. And she could see this, you know, like I said, like a shadow above her. And she was afraid of it, you know. She could feel that it was wrong, it was bad.
Ooh.
And she was, you know, she was trying to, you know, push me. She's like, David, you know, so there's something here, you know, like she was afraid. And the peculiar thing was that, you know, I wasn't waking up, you know, like I can sleep well, but, you know, I wasn't, you know, waking up. And she was like, you know, trying to push me and to wake me up. And she felt that she just felt bad. So she like crawled over me and she rolled me over to her side of the bed to try and kind of like shield me with her body, shield herself with my body, which is, you know,
wow.
I guess, you know, it was pretty funny. But she was like really afraid, you know, like, and she was she felt this thing like moving, you know, above her. And she was so scared. And she said, like, for a while, she was trying to wake me up and everything. And when she was, like, David, wake up. There's something here. You know, it was making her really afraid. And she said, all of a sudden, from the opposite side of her, she said she felt this light. And there was this presence inside the door, like inside the door frame. And she said, as soon as that light and that presence happened, she said, the fear went away from her, and she said, David, your brother's here. Wake up, David. You know, like, you know, wake up, David, your brother's here. And she said that after trying to tell me a couple of times, like I said, that sense of fear and wrongness completely just washed away and she was overcome by the sense of good and light. And she told me like a couple of times to try and wake up. And she said, out of nowhere, she just got hit like with this. You know, she just went straight to sleep. Like, you know, David, your brother, sir, your brother. And then she just, you know, fell asleep.
Wow.
And so I was like, oh my gosh, that's, you know, she was telling me this stuff and it was amazing. She was crying. And like, I saw your brother. I knew it was your brother. I could feel that it was him. And I was, you know, like oh wow, that's amazing. You know, I'm kind of jealous of you, but, you know, I'm happy that he came to help you, to rescue us. You know, like he would be the type of person to do that, you know, I would think. And
yeah.
So,
go ahead.
The story is not finished. So, you know, like this happened. And so then a couple of days later, our mailbox was, we didn't have the key for the mailbox because
mm-hmm.
it was a six apartment building. And, the mailman would leave the mail like on the floor in the front of the apartment. And, there was an old couple that lived above us, an old sweet couple, Liz and Alex. And, I went to the mailbox and there was a letter from Liz saying that, oh, I have your mail upstairs, you know, come and get it. So I went upstairs to Liz, you know, she's a talker. She was a, you know, very beautiful lady. You know, I was like, oh, hey Liz, you know,
mm-hmm.
So hey David, you know, like here's your mail and everything. And she tells me, she was very religious also, her and her husband. She said, hey David, did you guys know that a couple of days ago there was a bad spirit in the apartment? And I was like, yeah, there was. And she was like, yeah, Alex was seeing them. So the thing with Alex, her husband was blind. And so she said that, yeah, Alex was seeing them. They, like they were appearing in his, like, you know, he could see them, you know,
his mind's
like,
eye.
In his mind's eye, you know,
wow.
Like the spirit transcends the vision, you know. So he was like afraid and he told her there were spirits around. And she said she was walking around with her cross or crucifix. Saying, telling the spirits to go away that night, and I hadn't told her. I hadn't told her what had happened with my wife. I didn't even tell her then. After that happened, I was just like, you know, just flabbergasted at the whole situation. I was like, what happened with my wife? The same night, they, you know, they had that experience too. So that was something really amazing.
I think it's fascinating. And the thing is that we've had many stories of people seeing shadow people or evil spirits and those kind of things, and not to minimize those stories at all, because they're all extremely unique and interesting and very compelling to the people that have experienced them. But the thing about this story is that not only did you have the evil, you have the good come in and combat the evil, and it was the good that you knew the good of your brother. And I think that's really interesting. And people, David, often ask or ask me, do you believe in good or evil? And I will in turn ask some of our guests, and I will get guests on who invariably say, particularly my friends in the New Age community, oh, there is nothing like evil. It's just a lower vibration. To which I say, see Hitler, see Jeffrey Dahmer, see John Wayne Gacy, so forth and so on. I believe there's evil, and I believe there's good. And your story is really a great example of that. David, thank you for sharing your story. And I've got to believe that that's somewhat comforting for you to know your brother was there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, with the whole situation, you know, it's also like a validating story for me. You know, like in my faith and everything, believing in God, I'm believing, you know, good and bad. You know, this is like something that I can tell people, and, you know, people who don't believe in anything per se. And like, you know, in my heart of hearts, you know, I can believe that this is the truth and what happened. And it helps me. And in the end, it comforts me, and it should be a comfort to them too. But if, you know, if they don't believe that way, you know, everybody has, you know, everybody is themselves. And hopefully one day, you know, they can see the light, you know, we could say.
Yes. And thank you so much, David, for joining us tonight. That was a great story, and we appreciate your support for all these years.
No problem, Jim. Keep doing what you're doing.
Another international caller. We're always so glad to hear from them. Greg joins us from England. He's been listening for several months. He said he was looking for some paranormal podcasts, found some that he didn't like that much, but he found us, and thankfully, we were very much to his liking. We thank him for joining us today. Now, Greg has a couple of stories, and usually like the one caller, one story. But in this case, they're quick stories, so we thought we'd get them both in. Greg, welcome to the program, and I know your first story is about something very unique that happened to you when you were a child. Tell us about that one.
Okay. Unique is one word for it. So it's something I've not really talked about very much because it kind of, I've always thought it sounds a bit ridiculous, but here it goes anyway. It's something that happened. It's an experience happened to me when I was, I'm guessing, 5 or 6 years old, maybe 7. It was just something that happened one summer. My mum used to pick me up at lunchtime from school, just to come home for lunch, kind of have my lunch, and maybe get 5 or 10 minutes to go into the back garden and, you know, have a little play and stuff like that. And the first time it happened, I just remember going into the back garden and just kind of looking over the neighbour's garden up into the sky. And it sounds ridiculous, but I could see in the sky kind of floating. It kind of looked like an ape, just like the head and shoulders of an ape, just looking back down at me. I was looking up at it. I didn't feel threatened in any way. It felt quite welcoming, actually. I kind of spent 5 or 10 minutes just looking up at it in amazement. I remember a couple of times, actually, I'd kind of go in and try and drag my mum out to say the most ridiculous things. Mum, you've got to come look at there's a monkey in the sky. And she'd come out, and inevitably it'd never be there when she'd come out. But yeah, I'm guessing it happened maybe a dozen times or so that summer. I even got to a point where I'd know, I'd kind of feel it in my stomach. It was always kind of on a nice, hot, sunny day.
Huh.
There were no clouds in the sky. I wasn't looking directly up at the sun, so I'm 100% sure of what I saw was real to this day, kind of over 35 years later. Yeah, very strange, very odd. I can't really say too much more about the story. It's just something that I saw. It's kind of puzzled me ever since, but I guess lots of people see things when they're children. I've thought about it ever since, and I look up to the sky sometimes. I'd love to see it again, but I think as an adult, if I looked up to the sky and saw a monkey looking down at me, I'd probably question my own sanity. So maybe it's just one of those things that, you know, kind of children attuned to that kind of thing can accept what they see, you know, however bizarre it is. So,
well, I, you know what? I will never discount someone when they say something, because I believe there's things in this universe we don't understand. So, yeah, on its face of it, it might seem extremely strange and bizarre, but I would never be one to say, well, you were just seeing things, because I don't know what you saw. I mean, it sounds amazing to me, and people report all kinds of things. I kind of put this in the Fortean category. Folks out there remember Charles Fort, and he would write all these incredible books, and I think he spent his life in the New York Library cataloging throughout history all of these strange things happening, like raining frogs and so forth and so on. And I would never be one to say, well, you know, you're just imagining things. I would never say that, because I think there are much, much stranger things. Do you have any theories as to what it might have been? Any thoughts?
No, I mean, a few people I've spoken to have kind of speculated on spirit animals, things like that, whether it's got some kind of a shield for some kind of a UFO encounter. I couldn't really confirm any, or it was just an odd thing, and I couldn't put my finger on what it was or why it happened. I think it's just important as you get older to keep believing, you know, if you're sure that's what you saw, kind of not to talk yourself out of it as you get older. But,
I agree. Now, the second story you had, this was about you and your wife. Tell us about that one.
Yeah. I moved from Birmingham when I was about 30. My wife lives in Lincoln. So I've kind of moved up here now, and Lincoln's been my home ever since. It's a beautiful city. And when we found out our first child was about to be born, we were renting a huge house. It was a beautiful house. And as soon as I realised I was going to be a dad, I thought, right, we've got to downsize. We've got to save up some money, kind of, you know, get a deposit together for our own place. We moved to this. It was a new estate that had been built in Bracebridge Heath in Lincoln, but it was on the grounds of St John's Hospital. It's, believe it or not, an insane asylum that was built around the 1850s, I think. You can kind of see stuff on YouTube now about St John's. It's a very spooky place. But an estate has been built, a housing estate has been built on that area. There was lots of stuff. There was a church, there was lots of hospital buildings, and the burial sites. So I'm not sure whether that's actually got anything to do with it or not, but we were in that house at the time. And it was just one day I went to work. I was working about 25-30 miles away, maybe. It was a job I couldn't stand. So it got to the end of the day. I was glad to be getting home. I was the last one there. I was locking up, all the lights were off. And I was just stood in the corridor at work, and I had this, it was such a strange feeling. I went really cold, kind of all the hairs on my arm and hairs on the back of my neck stood up, and I just got such a vivid thought in my mind that I was at home, I was at the top of the stairs, I was looking into the bedroom, and I could see my wife. She was on the other side of the bed, and she was looking at me. She had a horrible look in her eyes. It was really scary. It was a really intense feeling. It was more than a thought. It was just so vivid. It really shook me. It probably took me a couple of minutes to get over. I tried to be pragmatic whenever strange things happen, so I kind of just shook it off and thought nothing of it. Carried on locking up at work, and then I was stood outside by my car. I had my mobile phone in my hand, and I was aware that you hear sometimes when people have had a bad accident or they're in severe danger, their family members sometimes see an image of them. And then that started going through my mind. Maybe she'd had an accident, or she was, you know, very ill or something, and I should phone her and just check that she's okay. But I talked myself out of that, because I thought, that's just being silly, just kind of let it go. It was nothing, it was just a thought.
Right.
And as I was about to put my mobile phone back in my pocket, my phone rang. It was my wife, and my heart sank. I thought, maybe she has had an accident, maybe something really bad happened. So I answered the phone, asked if she was okay. She was okay, but she sounded really, really shaken up and really scared. And she was actually asking me if I was okay. I was like, yes, I'm absolutely fine. I'm fine. Why? She said, the strangest things just happened. I was in the bedroom at home. I was just folding up some laundry. I was about to walk from the bedroom to our little boy's room to put some laundry away. And just out of the corner of my eye, I saw you standing at the top of the stairs. It really, really scared
me.
You had an intense, really scary look in your eye. And because it scared me so much, because I didn't hear you come in, I kind of, it just shocked me. I kind of took my focus off you just for a second. And then when I looked back up to say, well, how on earth did you get in the house without making any noise? You wasn't there. So we realised that we'd had this exact experience at exactly the same time, where we saw each other in the house. I was looking at my wife was looking at me. There's never been any reason for it whatsoever, whether it was just some connection we made at that exact moment, whether there was something in the house that connected us, we don't know. But to this day, my wife still can't talk about it without getting really upset. It was such an intense, strange thing that happened to us. Very scary, actually.
See, that's the odd thing, is that there was nothing specific to trigger it. Neither one of you were in danger or anything like that, but yet it happened. And that even gets into the question, and we've covered this on the shows as well, about doppelgangers and people seeing loved ones and people that they know in places that they couldn't possibly be. And that's another strange one. So really, again, back to your first story, hinting at the world is a far stranger place than we understand. Well, Greg, thank you so much for joining us today on The Campfire, all the way from England, and I hope you'll keep listening.
Oh, certainly will do. Thanks for the call, Jim.
If you enjoy adult coloring books, check out the True Ghost Story adult coloring book inspired by Jim's Campfire podcast and books. Creepy Coloring Fun, created by illustrator Len Peralta. Find it at Amazon, or for the direct links, go to jimharoldbooks.com. Now, back to the show.
Next up on the line is Meg from Oregon, and she was actually introduced to the program by another podcaster, a fine podcaster, Lex Wall, and his Anything Ghost show. I know he does mention the program from time to time, so I appreciate it, and you need to check out his stuff as well. So hopefully I can return the favor there. Meg had heard Danny a couple of weeks ago talk about some cat stories, paranormal cat stories that she had. And she wanted to chime in with her own, so we're glad to have her on the line. Meg, welcome, and tell us what happened.
Oh, okay. Let's see. So we live in rural Oregon on a Christmas tree farm. It's a 99-acre Christmas tree farm.
How cool.
And we moved here about 3 years ago. So the nature of my husband's business is that in February, he goes out of town for a couple of weeks because he's actually a commercial beekeeper. So they go to California for the almond pollination. But the first year that we were here, that February, I was feeling, you know, pretty anxious about being here alone. And I have two small kids who are four, going on 4 and 7. So, you know, 3 years ago, they were like 1 and 4. So I was nervous about being alone and pretty, you know, far out in the country. I think it was an evening, I started hearing, I think some meowing on the back porch, and I went out and there was a black cat there who was very friendly and wanted me to pet him. So I started to pet him and didn't really know, you know, what to do with them, because it's not that unusual to have kind of barn cats sort of wander, I guess, on and off properties. So I didn't know if he belonged to somebody or, you know, what his story was. And we've got a couple cats of our own, so I didn't want to just bring him into our house, because that might not have been great. But he kept showing up, like, through the whole time that my husband was gone, just to kind of come by and check in. And so I'd pet him, and eventually, you know, he started coming around more and more, and we ended up taking him in. So he still sort of comes and goes, but he definitely, you know, was a comfort to me that first year when my husband was out of town. And then our second cat story, I guess, was 2 years ago in the summertime, and I had suffered a really early term miscarriage, and I had to go in for a medical procedure. And the night before I was supposed to go in for my medical procedure, kind of related to that event, my son, my youngest son, kept waking up in the middle of the night and crying and crying. So I kept going into his room to check on him and pick him up and, you know, soothe him, kind of settle him back down to sleep. And it was summer and the windows were open, and I thought I heard like a little, you know, like a little meow, meow, like a really tiny little kitten noise.
Right.
But I thought, you know, like, there's no way, because we're you know, our nearest neighbors are like a quarter mile away. We're far from the road, and we're surrounded by, you know, Christmas trees. So, like, there's no way a little kitten could, like, make it. I mean, she did somehow, but I wasn't thinking that was even really possible because we're so kind of remote. And, you know, I couldn't figure out what it was. And, you know, I just ended up shutting the window because I thought maybe it was a, you know, some kind of night bird or something. I don't know. But so I shut the window so that my son could get back to sleep. And then I woke up the next morning and went outside to let our chickens out, because we have some chickens too. And I started hearing this meowing again. So I followed the meowing, and sure enough, there's this teeny tiny little kitten under my son's window, like kind of across and under from his window. And she was tiny. She, you know, she fit in the palm of my hand practically. So we picked her up and took her in and took her to the vet. And the vet was also just amazed, you know, that this kitten had, like, made it through the night, even. She was so little. I think the vet thought she was maybe about a month old. But it was really significant for me because, you know, I was feeling kind of sad and feeling this loss. And she just showed up at this really pivotal time. So, yeah, it was pretty amazing.
You know, I think the animals sense things, whether it's something physical or it's an emotional situation. I mean, my wife just had a occasion to pull her back, which is never any fun. Right away we have two dogs, and right away they came to her side to check and see how she was doing while she was kind of trying to convalesce and relax. And I think that animals definitely know, whether it's something physical or it's an emotional state, and we're feeling sad because of something that's happened like that.
Yeah, I think so too. It was just really amazing because, you know, she was like not a cat that we had. She just like showed up at this particular time, which was really kind of amazing to me, you know. And the fact that she was so little and you know, we're so far from, I really don't know how she ended up there, but I'm glad that she did. So that was really pretty amazing. And then the last story is, it's again, I mean, it's not quite as significant, but my mom was planning on doing some traveling, and she's going overseas, and she's feeling kind of nervous about it. And so that kind of made me feel kind of nervous for her about it. So, you know, kind of the night before she was flying out, I lit a candle and kind of, you know, was thinking about her and just kind of, I guess, saying a little prayer to just kind of keep her safe on her travels, you know. And the next morning I went outside again, and there's this huge calico, long-haired calico cat, just like, you know, curled up on a bench kind of on our back porch, just sitting there, you know, just like, I'd never seen this cat before or since. And she, I think it was, I don't know if it was a she or not, but I pet the cat a little bit, and then the cat just kind of trotted off, and I never saw her again. But I kind of took that as a sign that everything was going to be okay. And it was. So, and it was interesting, too, because, you know, we have four cats, because we moved here with two, and then the other two showed up, both black cats, too, which is interesting, the two that showed up. And they didn't bother this other cat that was just kind of hanging out very briefly, which is kind of interesting, too, because cats can be pretty territorial.
Right.
So, you know, it was just very strange.
That is so cool. That is so cool.
No. But I heard Danny's story, and I wanted to share. So,
well, I think that's a good thing. It definitely is a good thing. And Meg, we thank you so much for sharing these stories. Again, we've done stories on paranormal pets and, you know, signs from pets who have passed and different things. I always think it's such an interesting part of everything that we talk about here. And thank you for sharing your experiences on the campfire.
Oh, sure. Can I, you know what, I just thought of one more thing. I'll be
sure.
Really,
go right
really
ahead.
Great. It is cat, sort of cat related.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a ghost story. I've got plenty of those too, but I'll call about that another time. But I was visiting a friend in San Francisco who actually, her husband was, I think he had something to do with like a cemetery. I don't know. He was I'm not entirely sure if he was like part of the funeral home, or I think he was in charge of sales. But to make a long story short, they lived in this house that was like really close to the cemetery. It was kind of in the middle of a parking lot. It was sort of weird. But I got in, and, you know, it was late, and I went to bed, and I felt a cat jump up on the bed and kind of curl up with me. And I didn't check because I was so tired, and I just figured it was my friend's cat, because I've had cats pretty much my whole life. So I knew, you know, it didn't surprise me or shock me at all, because I was used to that sort of thing, a cat jumping on the bed and then curling up with you. And so the next morning I went down to breakfast with my friend, and I mentioned, you know, like, oh, your kitty slept with me last night. And she was like, what are you talking about? We don't have a cat. So I don't know if, I mean, I guess it could have been a ghost kitty, but, like, I know what I felt, and she was kind of very surprised by the whole thing, because she's like, we don't have a cat, and I don't know what you're talking about. So there's another cat story that's kind of strange. So.
Well, that is very, very neat. Well, Meg, thank you again for being a part of the campfire.
Thank you.
Boy, the new listeners are just flowing in. I can feel the wave of podcasting just becoming more and more popular. Zach is a new listener from Minnesota, been listening for a couple of months, and I think a friend told him about podcasts. He's like, those podcast things, I don't think I'm interested. And then I guess he tuned in and said, hey, that's not so bad. So he's been listening. We appreciate it. He's got a story about an experience that happened with him just recently. He shared it over at the Virtual Campfire Facebook group, which you should join for free if you're not a member of that. Jim Harold's Virtual Campfire on Facebook. And my assistant, Maddie, encouraged him to share his story on the show. And he did. And we're so grateful that he did. Zach, welcome, and please tell us what happened.
Thanks. Well, yeah, it happened about 2 weeks ago. I brought my 11-month-old daughter upstairs to lay in bed and try and get her to sleep. And my 3-year-old and my fiance were downstairs in the kitchen. Anyways, I was laying up in bed, and I heard like a doorstop, the little spring things, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, it sounded like somebody was playing with that, so I thought it was my daughter. So I went and looked, and nobody was there. I was like, well, what the heck? So I went downstairs and asked my fiance if it was her or my daughter, and she said, no, we've been down here. So I went back upstairs, laying in bed, just, you know, played it off like it was nothing. But I guess my daughter asked my fiance, did you see the guy looking at Daddy? And she said, what? And she told her to come and tell me. So I was laying in bed, and then she started talking about that guy. And I was like, oh, yeah, what do you look like? Blah, blah, blah. My fiance told me just to, you know, let her brush her teeth and get her to bed, because it was after 10. So we went in to brush her teeth, and as we're brushing her teeth, she looks in the mirror and she tells me, Daddy, that man's back. I said, where? And she said, he's in the corner. So I started asking questions again, and she told me he was in the corner and he was messing with the house. But then after that, my girlfriend, our fiance, told me to just stop bugging her and let her brush her teeth and get to bed. And then after that, haven't noticed anything since, but a little creepy.
Well, I mean, think about that. This child sees a strange man in the house. I'm guessing that your first concern is there an intruder in the house?
Yeah, at first I was wondering, you know, what's going on. So I went downstairs and looked, and I just figured, whatever. And then I know little kids can see stuff like that, so I just turned to ask her, you know, is he friendly? She didn't seem too scared, so figured maybe it was like my grandpa or something. Who knows?
Yeah, that's. And has anything else happened strange in the house?
Nothing since then. She hasn't brought it up, so if it does, then I'll ask her.
Interesting. Well, thank you, Zach, so much for tuning in. We appreciate it. We love to hear from listeners of all types. We especially love to hear from new listeners. So I hope you continue to enjoy the show. Please tell your friends.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Well, I hope that you enjoyed this version of The Campfire as much as we did, and I hope that you'll help spread the word. Now, these days, I've been recommending thusly, and I hope that you'll check it out and go ahead and do it, especially going into the Halloween season. If you have a friend who has a smartphone and who loves ghosties and ghoulies and all things spooky, and I bet that you do, next time you see him, with their permission, say, hey, can I see your cell phone? Show them. Look at the phone they have. See if they have the various apps where we might be, the podcasts app on Apple or on Android, Google Play or Spotify or iHeartRadio or TuneIn Radio or any other of the places the Paranormal Podcast and The Campfire might be. And please go ahead and subscribe them, of course, with their permission, and say, hey, check out these great campfire stories on The Campfire Show and all these smart authors and experts on the Paranormal Podcast, and you might be able to deal with that Jim Harold guy. But anyhow, please do tell them and show them and subscribe them. And if you're not subscribed, perhaps you should do the same. We thank you so much. We appreciate all of your support. And as always, stay spooky. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Jim Harold's Campfire. Tune in again next time for more stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things.